Hey, football fans, Drew Brees here. Kroger Play and Owner's Box have teamed up for the next generation of daily fantasy sports. First-time players can get $25 in free entries, plus 250 fuel points. And you can score all season long with 2x the fuel points for every dollar spent to use at Kroger Fuel Centers. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Void where prohibited. Eligibility restrictions apply. 18 plus in most eligible states, but age varies by jurisdiction. Offer is valid between 8/6/25 and 1/5/26. Terms apply. See full terms and conditions at ownersbox.com/footballfuelpointsTC.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
But first, against a backdrop of an upended presidential election, ministers Pascal Donoghue and Jack Chambers took to the floor of the Dáil yesterday lunchtime to deliver Budget 2026, described as striking the right balance by the government, but criticised as continuing the crisis in health and housing by the opposition. The overall budget package comes to just over 117 billion euro. Taoiseach Micheál Martin joins us to go through the reaction to Budget 2026. Taoiseach, good morning and welcome.
Good morning, Pat. Yeah.
Now, it would appear that nobody's happy.
Well, generally speaking, not everybody's ever happy with a budget. There were two fundamental issues really facing the country right now in the context of the tariffs and the changing world, protectionism, so on, and where Ireland is at. We're rising population. We have an infrastructure deficit. So the National Development Plan has to be coupled with the budget. And we said we would invest more in capital to get water developed, wastewater treatment, water supply increased, energy, infrastructure, the grid, public transport, roads and digital health. Parallel with that, we have to protect the least well-off in our society. And any objective assessment of this budget, the two lowest income deciles benefit the most from this budget by a significant amount.
Okay.
That's important because we took away the once-off packages of the last 2 years.
So those once-off packages mean that everybody was going to be worse off anyway because they weren't getting what they got last year.
Correct. And I have to be, that's the honest position. We could not keep doing once-off package from a financial sustainability perspective. That just wasn't possible. And also, inflation is coming down, although I accept that the prices are elevated because of what happened after COVID and because of the war in Ukraine.
Yeah, inflation doesn't correct itself usually.
Correct. It stays at the level and people, and what needs to happen is obviously real wages have to outstrip inflation. Will happen this year by about 5% wage increase versus 2% inflation, but it would take time. And so we have to allocate resources as best we can to protect those on the lowest incomes, but also to continue to invest in education, to continue to protect the jobs we have in our community. Yeah. So we have a full employment economy. Protecting jobs is the key to people's quality of life. And also then investing for the future jobs of tomorrow. That means the what we're doing on tax and research and development, and also in terms of James Lawless's package, in terms of significant increase in research and development funding to give us the ideas and the products that give us jobs for tomorrow.
Now, you can be alarmist about what people have lost, and there are people who have tough times. You know, they maybe have to live on social welfare, and the demands on those meagre funds are more than they can literally afford. So they are in deficit every week. They have to go to the Vince DePaul or whatever. Yeah. But looking at KPMG produce a few examples, married couple with three children, married couple with one child, a retired couple, cohabiting couple, single mother of one child, single renter with high income job. And they're all worse off. Now, admittedly, by as little as maybe 0.62 of a euro, 62 cent a week. But the only people who are better off, retired couple, they're 16 euro a week better off. And that's basically down to the pension.
Yes, I don't disagree with that analysis. I haven't gone into the specifics of it. But the absence of a personal tax package on this occasion will impact workers over certain income thresholds. We took a decision, and when I became Taoiseach, we have a child poverty unit within my department, and I wanted to put flesh in the bone of that. I wanted to say once and for all, we're going to give a package that can arrest the increase in children in consistent poverty now. I'm not talking about relative poverty, I'm talking about consistent poverty, which is about 8%. We need to get that down to 3%. So there's a 300 million package there, which really does help people on the very lowest incomes, particularly in terms of the 16 euros for children over 12 extra on top of that payment. So child support payment and 8 euros. The message is, given where we are in the world, and also given the volatility of corporation tax receipts, that's a problem for us in terms of planning national finances. We've focused and pivoted to investing in capital infrastructure, which will protect the jobs we have and enable us to attract more jobs into the future. That's very important. We're growing as a population.
But is it hard
it's been
to
exponential
explain
growth
that?
Of population. It really has been.
It's an extraordinary charge that was made against you by various parties that you have abandoned populism, in other words. You've gone away from the promises of the pre-election budget to saying we have to do this for the future. But for ordinary people, they look at what's coming into their pockets. They know in their bones maybe that building infrastructure for water, for housing, for the electricity grid, long term would be good for them or their children. But at the moment...
I get that. And I get cost of living is very tough on them. But I remember I came in when I was teaching in 21 and the CRU came into us, that's the regulatory authority for energy, and said we might have a problem in terms of energy that year. We had to rush emergency legislation through to generate, to get in gas generation to try and avoid a situation where the lights could go out on a particular day or a month.
We are addressing that, I know.
Yeah, but we're up against it in terms of planning and delivery, and we're going to triple the amount of money that will go into the grid. But if that happened, if an event like that happened, it would be a huge blow to investor confidence into the country. So I think we have to invest in utilities. We have to make sure that as a growing population, we can have enough electricity,
but
we can have enough water, and we can get public transport more efficient.
The utility providers are making fortunes. I mean, they really are making huge money.
Yeah, and I think the energy credits, in a way, I'll have to be honest, we did it for the last 2 years, in a way got them off the hook.
Yeah,
because
the reason,
I mean, you know, they could keep on increasing, and they are making profits. I think we do have to, and I've asked the Minister, Dara O'Brien, has established a group to look at how the energy price situation in Ireland and how it's regulated.
But the energy auction on electricity is the flaw. It's the fly in the ointment. And again, when ministers come in, we've said to them, why don't you do this? Why don't you attack that auction system? It's flawed. It means we pay more for our power than virtually anywhere else in Europe. Why is that? I mean, it's not because we're at the other end of the last house on the cable, as it were, because we are generating our own solar now. We're generating our own wind, which is local to us. And we do have to import fossil fuels. We know that. But at the same time, we are paying far too much. And it's down to the pricing structure that the providers are paid.
I think that there is an issue without question there. And I've asked Dara O'Brien to fundamentally re-examine all of that. But also, I think we do need more renewables. And one of the big challenges we have now is to deliver offshore wind as quickly as we can. And I've established a clearinghouse within my department. I met with the industry and government for the first time because it was a bit of a, you know, and a lot of work has been done by the department, I have to say that. But planning, delivery, we just have to get that offshore wind that will assist us in getting prices down over time. But in the intervening period, we do have an issue, and I don't disagree with what you're saying.
Now, the problem is that we are generating wind. We're generating it cheaply, but that cheap wind does not pass into the punter's pocket.
Yes, and as I said, the manner in which the price has been set and across Europe, gas would have been the bottom, you know, in terms of the metrics of how energy prices was devised. If you look at the Iberian Peninsula, for example, they got a carve out over the last number of years. I think we need to look fundamentally at our regulatory system and how price is determined.
I got a text from someone, a listener who's in the know. He says, the electric companies are price gouging. 1 kilowatt hour is 10 cent on the wholesale market. Approximate transmission charges are 4 cent. The rest is the companies taking the mick.
Well, look, as I say, it needs to be examined in detail. There's no simple solution to it. We do have a very, you know, we're a different type of.
But do you not understand? If you could actually address that, all the cost of living concerns would be evaporate.
Absolutely. And when I came into government, we did make a commitment that that's an area we want to fundamentally, both domestically here in Ireland and at European level, change.
Yeah, but our auction is a domestically structured thing that could be addressed straight away. Whoever supplies the last megawatt, that price that they are paid determines what the rest are paid. And this is ridiculous.
I've asked the minister to examine that. That work is underway.
Okay, moving to something you did for one sector, and that's hospitality, VAT dropping from 13.5% to 9% from next year, from mid-year. The cost of that is, in a full year, over 600 million, and that's what the Exchequer will have to bear next year. You've been accused, I think Owen Reedy of the Congress of Trade Unions was one of the people who said you've been conned, that employment in the sector has actually gone up Not down. So all these disastrous cries from the industry, people will be out of jobs, outlets will be closing. Cafes and restaurants are one of the most vulnerable. Forever and a day, they open, they close, they rebrand, they carry. This is the way that the nature of the business. It's a competitive business. And you've been conned.
I don't think we've been conned. There's a huge churn in the industry, as you say. People close, people open up again. But there also needs to be a bit of stability around that and sustainability for people's lives and people who work in restaurants and so forth, and also people who own them. Many of them are small.
And I know you made the point that some of the McDonald's and so on are franchisees.
They're franchisees, oh, yeah, for many
so
of them are
franchisees. So that complicates any taxation matter. But the idea, I mean, some creative thinking in the Department of Finance may be on maybe a special litter tax for them, because...
Hey, football fans, Drew Brees here. Kroger Play and Owner's Box have teamed up for the next generation of daily fantasy sports. First-time players can get $25 in free entries, plus 250 fuel points. And you can score all season long with 2x the fuel points for every dollar spent to use at Kroger Fuel Centers. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Void where prohibited. Eligibility restrictions apply. 18+ in most eligible states, but age varies by jurisdiction. Offer is valid between 8/6/25 and 1/5/26. Terms apply. See full terms and conditions at ownersbox.com/footballfuelpointstc.
They generate rubbish.
Well, again,
you could.
I think
what
tends to happen when we take measures like this, people look for the one example of a McDonald's.
But there's loads of examples. There's Wendy is now opening up in Cork, I believe.
Like, but we're being accused of over-regulating, increasing costs too much on business, and we don't want to go down that road in terms of additionality, in terms of costs. And there's a lot of measures we've taken on the litter front, and all of that has improved. Many of those companies do take significant measures, to be fair. But I think if you take the tourism industry, depends on a resilient hospitality sector. And I've noticed, around rural Ireland in particular, you know, you take West Cork, Kerry, go up the entire West Coast, it's a seasonal business. In many instances.
Okay, but the idea,
and many of them have said to us that they're at the end of their tether. And what worries me is, and I've great respect for Owen Reid, and I've engaged with him through the leave process and so on like that. There's thousands of jobs in this sector as well. And when the report was done in terms of increased costs on business by the Department of Enterprise, Trade and Employment, hospitality was signalled out as one that took the brunt of the increased costs around...
But many of the costs
which
are government
imposed,
generated.
Yes, yeah, which government imposed in terms of either increased minimum wage approximating to the living wage, and more sick day leaves, auto-enrollment, which will benefit thousands and hundreds of thousands of workers in time. So all these are additional costs, and the hospitality sector took the brunt of that with the hairdressing and others. And this is an attempt to try and at least... acknowledge that and try and balance that.
I mean, the problem, I suppose, for any hospitality operator, they say, maybe the coffee's too dear, I'll have to drop the price. But the Fiscal Council did the analysis and they found out that increases in VAT are inevitably passed on, reductions in VAT are not. So the question for the operator is, if I drop the price of the coffee, will I get more business and be more viable? Or do I keep that money and put it in my back pocket to make me more viable?
I think there's an issue there, and I've said this to the hospitality sector. You know, the level of that cannot be the vehicle or the modus operandi of your businesses, so to speak. And they should develop a business model that's not overly dependent on what the rate of VAT is. Now, obviously, in terms of if VAT is too high, it can impact on the price. And if you ally that with labour costs, which they have been at pains to say to us has been quite significant for them, and I think we'd all have to acknowledge that, even though it brings about improvement and for everybody else in terms of workers' quality.
Now, do you say the same thing to the hairdressing sector, for example? They get the 9% cut from next year as well. But their real problem is maybe generated by COVID, maybe it was always there, is the black economy. I mean, if you go in and you're paying, as a woman might, €200 for some sort of a colour and cut, don't tell me they're not making money on that. Of course they are. But if they're losing customers to the black economy, that's a different question, which they really have to address in their own sector.
And to a certain extent, also, government has to address the black economy, and revenue does. And the Irish Revenue Service has a strong credentials and reputation for being strong. It is an area that is subject and vulnerable to the black economy, no question about that. But it also has been subject to increased costs. And it is, again, a job-intensive industry. And that brings with it its own costs. So we are underpinning in the domestic employment sector, those particular areas in terms of job protection and enabling the businesses to be viable into the future. The other, you know, so the tax package relates, so we've extended the rent credit and so on like that for renters, but also there's the VAT on the apartments. So you have, and then we've also extended or maintained electricity and gas down to 9%, which helps people. And if we didn't do that, energy prices would go up even further again, significantly.
Now, the question of the apartment, the VAT on new apartments being sold down from now, this moment, does that mean the price of those apartments will fall immediately?
Not necessarily.
Why not?
Because it's a viability measure as opposed to a price measure at this particular point in time.
But if they've got them built,
the issue,
and now you've given them,
it may, that will, the market will decide that. But you can't, you know, we didn't want to do anything that would arrest the construction or the ongoing property, you know, the market and the development of.
I mean, Cairnholmes have said that the price of an apartment could drop by 80 or 90,000.
It could.
And I'm trying to figure that out if it's only.
Well, you see, in answering your question, I was giving you the motivation behind it was more focused on the viability gap because, as James Brown says, there's 40,000 planning commissions out there for apartments that are not being built. And repeatedly, the response has been that we cannot build them at a price that people can afford to buy them at. So we've taken a series of measures. We've looked at the apartment standards and changed those. We've also done the RPZ, which gives some potential for funds and so on to say we can make sustainable. We can make it work sustainably over a 10 to 15 year period.
So what you're saying is that the people who build apartments have looked at the cost, lifts, shafts and all this, and you've done something on that, which may not be the right thing to do, by the way. No balconies, no lifts or not enough lifts. One lift goes down and everybody is screwed. You know, you're doing all of that kind of thing. So the theory is we make it possible to build cheaper. They'll pass it on and people can afford, therefore, to buy where they couldn't afford to buy the apartment at the price the builder would build it at. But sure, they're not building to sell anyway. They're building to rent. In my area, I know there's virtually nothing for sale. Loads of new apartment developments, nothing for sale.
Well, we don't actually have loads of new apartment developments.
Well, in my area, there's loads of them. Okay.
But generally speaking, in terms of nationally, the figures are well known. And that's a huge problem. The private sector is not involved to the degree that it should be. The state investment in housing is enormous right now. This budget increases that significantly again, but we cannot on our own, the government and the state on its own will not be able to give us the housing supply and apartment supply that we require. And we've got to get the market working again. And we have to have a private sector to complement the enormous state effort. The state will do about, as a result of this budget, hopefully build over 10,000 social houses. And also, we've delivered more social housing last 4 years than previous decades, but we need to get it up to around 10 per year. But then we have to get affordable. We have to get more private sector housing on top of that to make sure we can get to 50,000 per annum.
Now, lots of texts coming in. My son left Monday for Australia, can't afford to pay rent here, will never own his own house. Everything's ridiculously expensive here. That's from Patrick. I live in a village in North Kerry. No house, public or private, can be built and connected to the main sewerage system because there is no capacity. Planning permission for private developments are refused for this reason. My children will never have the opportunity to live in their own community because of the problem of sewers.
But that's why, at the very beginning of this interview, I said that's why we've decided to invest more and more in water and wastewater treatment, and huge funding has now been given to Irish Water to do that. And also, I have said to Irish Water, we've had discussions, they should facilitate developers in places like North Kerry to provide their own wastewater treatment plans for developments that would be inspected by Irish Water or by the local authority, because Irish Water themselves will acknowledge to us that they're not going to get to every village and every town in Ireland, that they have a national plan now in terms of the areas of max highest population to get wastewater treatment plants in there. And I think we need the Irish Water working in partnership with the private sector in villages and rural towns to get good schemes underway that would enable people to live affordably in their own rural local communities.
Some of the comments coming in, I absolutely understand and support the need for a prudent budget, but the one thing that really annoys me as a net tax contributor is yet again, those who refuse to work get an increase and a bonus. We're at full employment, no legitimate excuse for any able-bodied person not to be working. Another one along similar lines, that's from Stephen in Wicklow. You haven't protected the cohort that actually votes for you. No tax breaks for the squeeze middle. Why should the majority of us in the middle ever vote for you again?
Well, I spoke to Derek Leary and the Secretary General and others in the Department of Social Protection. We went through this. The numbers on job seekers allowance is low, and it's fluid. In other words, people lose their jobs and can take time to get a job back, but they move out of job seekers allowance and get a job again.
Is there a job for everybody out there?
There's a type of job out there for everybody. Mm. But a lot of work goes into enabling people to get back into the workforce. Our participation rates in employment now are probably one of the highest in Europe.
Finally, on the budget, and there's so many things, so many elements we could talk about and tease out, but do you accept this will be known as the Builders and Burgers budget?
Well, you'll always get a good line. I mean, I was in an interview last night and one producer said to me, will we call it a missed opportunity budget, which I think was a great favour of Michael Noonan when he was in opposition. So fair play, I think, was it Jed? He gets the prize for the slogan, but it doesn't actually define the substance of this budget, which is prosaic. It's not poetry, but it's good solid prose in terms of the future of the country. Mm. And it does invest, as I say, in areas like research and development and infrastructure that will matter to people and young people into the future.
Now, tonight you're going to be going into a cauldron, I suspect, in your parliamentary party. You have said the Jim Gavin debacle that you accept full responsibility for it. What does that mean?
Well, I mean, I did recommend strongly. First of all, the party were clear.
I mean, you are saying you recommend.
I recommended
strongly
Jim Gavin to be our candidate.
That's accepting the blame, but the responsibility, that's slightly different.
Well, we can argue about the semantics around that, but fundamentally, I did recommend that. I'm not responsible for everything that unfolded, obviously, because we would have been totally unaware of the issue, despite very comprehensive due diligence, because we know what presidential elections can do. And I have the experience of knowing what they have done to people in the past and how they've been very difficult. But the party were adamant that they wanted, and I accepted, I agreed with that we would run a candidate. You know, the party's come a long way from the nadir of 2011. Mm. We're now the largest party in Dáil Éireann and the largest in local government. People felt we should contest. Unfortunately, prior to the summer recess, we didn't have a candidate. No one came forward from the parliamentary party.
I mean,
party.
You said that, people didn't put their hands up. Now, Mary Hanifin is no longer in the parliamentary party.
I'm talking about the PP, But Mary did. Mary Hanifin
A well-known Fianna Fáil person who's represented at local level and at national level and ministerial level, indeed. There were other names being thrown around. Barry Andrews is one name that was knocking around, maybe not that seriously. But, I mean, putting your hand up versus you deciding maybe the best person to represent us is, and you rejected Bertie Ahern out of hand.
No, I didn't. I mean,
is that not true?
The speculation. Well, sorry, if you want my honest opinion, I don't think Bertie would have made it. And that's just a person. Nothing against Bertie at all. I have great respect for Bertie Ahern.
Because
of what he did for the peace process, I think we can. It's one of the single greatest achievements in Irish society, that peace process. But, and he deserves credit for that. I think he should. You know, look.
Would it have been bruising for him?
It would have been incredibly bruising for him. I don't know why he would want to bring it upon himself. Look, Jim Gavin is about one particular issue in terms of one particular situation. There would have been, everyone would know, let's be honest.
The finance minister with no bank account.
The enormity of what would have been churned out. And that's just an observation. And I did take soundings in respect of others. And we did do research. You know, the party did, and I'll be talking to the party about this tonight, and I've no issue with the party. If they want to review all of this, they can. But when I say no one in the PP, and that's an issue for the future as well, I didn't know anybody in the PP wanted to run before the end of July. Like, no one had come to me about that.
Billy Keller, who's an MEP, hadn't mentioned...
No, in fact, I don't want to rehearse all of this, but Billy would have said to me, that I should run, or not, he said it to people.
Okay, two questions prompted immediately. Yeah. Do you regret not running yourself?
No, I don't, you see, and this
because,
is something...
I mean, even if you want to run, you've got to wait 7 years now.
But this is other talk. I mean,
if your leadership is in jeopardy...
I'm reading in newspapers that people are saying, he can't have it in 7 years, or he thinks he might have it in 7 years. I mean, where are these people coming from? I don't know who these guys are. I could give names, I'm not going to use it. I mean, I have a life too. You know, you know, 7 years. 7 years is a lifetime. At our, you know, so the idea that I'm plotting and saying I take that in 7 years' time. I mean, get real out there. Who's ever saying that to journalists? And journalists are writing it. Obviously, they're getting it from people.
Okay.
It's nonsense. And I don't regret about it personally. I don't. And that's a personal decision in terms of my own life.
When you met Bertie at Martin Manser's funeral, yeah. Did he have any words of advice about weathering this particular political storm?
We didn't get a chance to talk about that.
He had a very wintry face on him.
It was a beautiful ceremony in honour of Martin Manser, and his children did Martin great credit. Mm. I thought it was the most eloquent, beautiful tribute to Martin Manser, and it did bring back the best of what we've done in Fianna Fáil in terms of Martin Manser's role serving three Taoiseach, Charles Haughey, Albert Reynolds and Bertie Ahern, in terms of achieving peace in this island. I was in the government that eventually signed the Good Friday Agreement. It is a great achievement by us and many others as well, I'll say that. And I think Bertie Ahern was a person who deserves particular credit for that.
Indeed, Alistair Campbell on The Rest Is Politics paid tribute to Martin Manser for his involvement in the peace process. But going back to the whole Jim Gavin thing, you say that you didn't know and you were ambushed. But according to The Independent, they made an inquiry on the 8th of September, which is the day before your selection, to Fianna Fáil about a landlord and tenant issue, not the very specific which they subsequently published, but they made an inquiry about Jim Gavin having a landlord and tenant issue the day before. So could nobody have shouted halt?
Well, they didn't. What are you aware of was the type of question.
Yeah, are you aware that he has?
And the answer was no, we're not. And the person said,
no red flag there.
Well, sorry, they immediately went to the candidate.
Yeah.
And said, no, absolutely not.
Now,
so, like,
we've had Jim.
And there was other rumours, you see, as well, you know, and this is very difficult for people who put themselves forward. And the people, there was quite a number of people had a session with Jim. And as you do, I don't think any ever TD ever would have gone through what he would have gone through
Jack
in terms
Henry
of an assessment.
The full vetting was done. But, you know, if, for example, they had asked him, you were a landlord, that was known, I think. Did you register with the RTB? Were you within the law or were you breaking the law? I mean, that's a fairly basic question. So when you're saying there was a full vetting, if they didn't ask that question, what kind of vetting was that?
Is that in itself a block? You know, those 60% of people didn't register at that particular time. Is that a block? And that would have been asked. You know, but I think the fundamental point also was asked. The minute you heard someone was landlord, the question was asked, were there any issues in terms of tenants? And the answer was no.
Okay.
You know? And there was other rumours going around, and all those questions were asked. And there was invented stories, which we know about on social media, which were horrible and untrue. So
I know era of fake news, it's hard to
and in the world of
dissect what might be true
and all of us, like we and officials in press offices and so on, get queries all of the time. Is this true? Is that true? Have you heard about that? Can you check this? And it's very hard to sift through. And if you're given information to the effect that that's not the case.
And one of the supporters of Billy Keller was said he heard that there was this issue for Jim Gavin. And he was asked, did he go to your office to report it? He said, sure, if I reported every rumour that I heard in Leinster House, I'd be in the Taoiseach's office all day. But at the same time, there was a bit of a get out, you know, why.
I think he should have said it to us.
He should have.
Yeah, but it may not have made any difference, by the way, because the response would have been probably the same.
Because Jim Gavin said, I have no issue.
Yeah, I have to be balanced on that.
Now, are there wider issues that might, and I don't want to address like conspiracy theories and so on, but other issues related to property or landlords or banks that may emerge? Because one of the problems with this particular process is that once the candidate is in the auras, they're untouchable. There's no process. You know, if a scandal emerged about somebody after they got the job,
well, that's possible.
You'd have to force them to resign of their own bat. You couldn't remove them.
No, and but that's an issue. That's human nature. That's an issue in life itself. And there is the level of scrutiny today is far more severe, I suppose, and intensive than it would have been in previous eras. And that is the nature of it. And presents a very challenging proposition for people both entering politics, but certainly seeking to be elected as president.
Have you spoken to Jim Gavin since this whole thing broke?
I spoke to him Sunday evening, yeah.
But not since?
Not since. And because he's taken a few days out. And but I will. I mean, I feel very sorry for him.
I think everybody does. I mean, because, he has done the state some service.
He has. And it's been very traumatic for him. And it was very traumatic on Sunday evening. Because this is a man who's achieved a lot. And like all the people I spoke to about Jim Gavin before he's nominated were very highly, they commended him very highly about his character, both sporting people, people in the military, and in, particularly in but the North, people in the North, East, inner city. This is something that, this was, like, people spoke very highly of
but
Jim Gavin and
their experiences
of him. But
were you disappointed in his performance as a candidate? Because I said it on this programme a couple of times, that the Jim Gavin I saw on the campaign trail, I couldn't imagine him motivating Dublin to 5 in a row. You know, like, there must be more to him than we saw.
I think he, like, because to me, we're making the point like that, he's obviously a very good operator and very good effective mentor. And all the sports people will say that. I mean, there was a very good article written by Martin Breheny on Jim Gavin's incredible achievement in terms of the rules changing, fundamentally changing radically the Gaelic Games rules, which is safe football, as people would say.
Yeah.
But it's not only that. He actually won it. They won 80% of the vote at a fairly conservative GAA Congress.
Okay, but
traditionally. The point being...
But that didn't translate.
Correct. I take your point on that. I'd acknowledge that.
Yeah. So you're happy that nothing more is going to emerge about your choice of candidate? Because if anything does emerge about anything, and I don't even mention any speculation because that would feed things. So you're saying there's nothing more to come out?
Not that I know of. I mean, I can, you know, any sort of, any due diligence is only as good as the information you receive. But it was intensive.
Before I let you go, the latest flotilla bound for Gaza has been intercepted by the Israelis, and the independent Barry Heenan is one of those detained. So the question is, will you be in touch with the
yes.
Israeli ambassador about all of this?
Absolutely. And again, we want people treated properly. I'm disturbed by some of the commentary that I heard in respect of those who've come back and who had been in detention. Our ambassador is exceptional in Tel Aviv. Sonia McGinnis is just an exceptional ambassador, along with our ambassador in Cairo. They do great work for Irish citizens, which underpins the necessity of maintaining diplomatic relations, by the way, that we can look after our people when they get into difficulty. And I would say to the Israeli government, these are peaceful people. They're highlighting a humanitarian catastrophe in Gaza. They're not a threat to anybody, and they should be treated properly, humanely, with all the basic necessities of life and so on provided to them until they're sent home.
The final question has got to be about the threat from within your own parliamentary party to your leadership. I mean, you want to lead your party into the next election. Do you think that's less likely now after the events
of
last week?
I was elected, like in the last general election, as leader of Fianna Fáil, to the largest party. I think that said something in terms of where the public were, in terms of who they wanted to be Taoiseach. And I'm going to fulfil that mandate. I was appointed, obviously, by the Dáil. You have to get a Dáil majority to be Taoiseach, and that happened. In terms of the stewardship of government, in terms of...
Feel vulnerable?
I think there's clearly... Look, I understand fully why people are angry. I mean, we had a presidential candidate. No, we don't. It's devastating for members of the party out the grassroots. It's devastating for TDs. I understand that. That creates a pressure. I have to rise to it.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
Hey, football fans, Drew Brees here. Kroger Play and Owner's Box have teamed up for the next generation of daily fantasy sports. First-time players can get $25 in free entries, plus 250 fuel points. And you can score all season long with 2x the fuel points for every dollar spent to use at Kroger Fuel Centers. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Void where prohibited. Eligibility restrictions apply. 18+ in most eligible states, but age varies by jurisdiction. Offer is valid between 8/6/25 and 1/5/26. Terms apply. See full terms and conditions at ownersbox.com/footballfuelpointstc.